Well, it's time now at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday for the Kenai Conversation. And today we're going to talk about libraries. The internet was supposed to be the death knell for libraries, what with Google and Wikipedia and all manner of stuff, the end to the Dewey Decimal System and everything. But not only are libraries surviving, they're thriving. They're getting bigger. They're doing more things. We're going to find out why. Why aren't libraries dead? Well, not really. That's not the question. But how are they thriving so well? And we have a couple of experts in the studio who are with us. Mary Jo Joyner, the librarian, the head librarian for the city of Kenai, and Rachel Nash, the head librarian for the city of Soldotna. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I should have mentioned before we went on the air, you need to be about this close to the microphones. And you can move them. It's okay. It won't make too much noise on the air. How are you guys?
Doing great. Beautiful morning.
It is. However, we are all disappointed at the moon, are we?
Well, it's still there.
Well, for something that only happens once every 150 years, I was really hoping for better weather. The super blue, Bloody Mary moon, whatever it was.
I'm sure other people in the country saw it who had clearer skies.
They did. You're really looking on the bright side of things here. I like that. Well, tell me. You know, should I start off with my question, why aren't libraries dead? Why are libraries thriving in the age of the internet?
I guess I'd say why not? because books are still really popular, actually, the hardcover book. And in the age of the internet, people need more help than ever to filter through the plethora of information that's out there. It's just, and also, there's the whole fake news thing, and I think that libraries can help people figure out what's real and what is not.
Yes, agreed. I mean, the internet's a very powerful tool, but it takes human advocates to continue to support intellectual freedom and to make sure people are aware that there is a lot of fake news out there.
You know, that's very good. The intellectual freedom is good. I remember after 9/11, I was living here then, too. In the meantime, I was down in Kodiak, but I've come back. I remember after 9/11, I think it might have been the Kenai Library passed something that said, we're not going to help, what was it, the Patriot Act or something? They wanted cities' help to come when feds come in and find out who's checking out what books. Wasn't that a thing?
Yeah, definitely was a thing. Libraries across the country took issue with that, and some librarians, I think it's in Connecticut, actually went to jail because they would not comply with some of the regulations. Libraries are great because even Google kind of censors what they give you based on what they know you've been looking at. Even your news feed from Microsoft, whoever you're looking at, says, oh, they're looking at articles on X, and so we'll give them more of those. And libraries don't do that. We try to get a broad spectrum of information and ideas out there for people.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to say you have the right to view any information and put any information out there, which we certainly need to support that right. It's another thing to actually make sure that there is access to that information, and libraries and librarians make sure that people are aware of what might be blocking them. For instance, the algorithms that Google uses, or when you're even on Facebook, they also have you pegged as a certain kind of person who wants to look at a certain kind of thing, and then you might not be getting information you need to see, and the information you're getting might not actually be true.
Oh, are you guys relating this at all to your patrons? I mean, is this something that's an active librarian mission?
We actually had a workshop on fake news. So we do periodically try to, you know, educate people, you know, right up front and out there about what they need to watch out for.
Wow. When people come in and they're looking for something that they could have found online, how are you detecting that? How are you directing them to something that is, more unbiased and, you know, along the lines that you said you're trying to direct them to.
Mm-hmm. Well, for starters, sometimes we have to help them ask the question. Sometimes people say, I want to know this, and we repeat it back to them and we say, you know, from my understanding, you want to know this. Sometimes the question they're asking might be biased. I mean, obviously, we have print resources. We also have access to the Alaska Digital Library, which is ebooks and e-sources, and also SLED. And that has tons of databases. Those are very relevant and up to date. So they can always know that that's going to be good quality information with sources that are cited. So that's it for starters.
Is SLED still a thing?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Wow. I remember when I got my first email address when I was living in Bethel, I got an account for SLED, and it was all text-based.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's still primarily text-based, but there are some things that are on there that are not entirely text-based.
Yeah, and
it's an amazing wealth of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's expanded.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one of you could tell our listeners a little bit about what SLED is, the State Library Entry Doorway.
Yeah, something like that. So it's basically a collection of information that's organized digitally. Some of the highlights, they have something called Student Resources in Context, which it is primarily for children and teens in school, but I usually refer adults to it as well for your fast facts. There's also the homework help, which that's something that we have been fighting long and hard to keep. It allows, I think it's kindergarten through college age.
Absolutely.
Students can get live homework help.
And in Alaska, we're at an advantage because they're open basically through the wee hours of the morning. And because we are 4 hours behind everyone else, our students can get into these tutors and information without as much competition from, so if you're in Connecticut, you're competing with other kids in Massachusetts, all over New York, whereas here, maybe Hawaii would be the only other place that would be trying to access it at the same time. So if you're a student in Alaska looking for homework help, this is a great resource for you. And it is tremendously used. It's used.
Wow. I didn't even know that was a thing. There's homework help available on the SLED website.
With live tutors.
Live tutors.
Yes, and also small engine repair is another one that's very well used. So if you're at home, you're trying to fix your boat or even your snow machine, you can just go on your computer, your tablet, anywhere in Alaska, look up the information, and you've got it right there at your fingertips. You don't even need to visit the library that day. They also have the automotive repair manuals, which have replaced the old Chiltons. It's the same thing. You can access it wherever you need it at the moment that you need it.
No kidding.
Well, yeah, it's great.
Wow. I'm thinking in my head that perhaps what you guys need is better PR. Some of these things are just amazing to me. And that's just, like, why haven't I heard of any of it?
It's hard to say. Marketing is a really difficult thing for libraries. We really don't have a tremendous budget for it. And the kind of marketing, I think for a while, Anchorage was using the buses to send some of this information out. But there's always new people and new coming up, and it's hard to get that out. We certainly have all that available in our brochures at the library, and it's all sitting out there. But it's hard to really bring it to people's attention. There's something called on SLED called Novelist too, which helps people pick out books. So you could say I like X book and find a read-alike one that's similar to that, and it'll help you find really fun things and good things to read.
Huh. You know, one of the things I noticed in my time, when I came back to Kenai here this fall, this summer, from the time that I was away, is that both of your libraries have expanded in the last 12 years. And, you know, I know there have been a bunch of new libraries built around the state. Kodiak got one while I was down there. And there were some nice ones down in Southeast somewhere. I can't think of right off the top of my head. But how hard was it to convince city council members who might not, you know all these things that you guys do about the wonderfulness of libraries and all the things they can do to actually invest more money in something that, you know, troglodytes might think is a dying institution.
I came here 12 years ago, and they had been trying to build and expand the Kenai Library for about 15 years. But I would say that the city council was always in support of that. It was a matter of getting the funding and really moving forward with it. And with this new city manager at that time, Rick Cook, we were able to move the project forward. We went out to a vote of the people, and 65% of the people supported a bond issue. And then the state also passed a Library Construction Act. So we were able to take advantage of some of that money, and the Rasmussen Foundation helped fund our library. So from my aspect, because I came in at the time when we were just ready to go, it wasn't really hard to convince anybody.
Ours was a very similar story, and it certainly helped that we had the state support, and I believe also Senator Machicki, who at the time I believe was Mayor Machicki, pushed that through as well. People went door to door to help with getting the bond issue passed, and they did. So I really think when the people come forward and say, yes, we need a community center like a library, yes, we need this here, it's it was an easy win for us as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned community center, and that's something that I've noticed in Kodiak. The old library was right downtown. It's middle of town. It's not far away now, but it's 200 feet in the air on a hill. But before, it was it really was a community center. You know, there was a homeless shelter two blocks away, and, you know, the weather can get real bad. Not everybody has a job that day in a cannery because it's piecework. And, you know, it served as a shelter for people during the day when they couldn't go elsewhere. Kids would go there after school, not always to study. They had other interesting things going on. And actually, I have a list here on my computer of some of the things you guys have going on that I'm going to ask you about. But has the role of libraries changed, or has it evolved? Because I see more things going on in libraries now than when I was a little kid. You just go in there and you find a book and you check it out and you leave.
I'd say it's more evolved because I think we always did things like story hours. There were always author visits and programs, so it's just an expanded purpose. It's just become more of a community center, and I think the challenge is trying to be everything, because we have the digital things we have to provide. We provide computers now. We have the books, the magazines, the DVDs, so we're just getting filling more and more roles as we go along in the profession.
Mm-hmm. And how are you managing to budget for all that?
Well, I'm pretty steadfast in requesting a good budget, or at least a level budget for our materials, which is the huge expense for the library. And I've been fortunate. The city of Kenai is totally supportive to the library and the library budget. So I would not say I've had any issues. I don't think that that's necessarily true statewide. I think there are some libraries that are having budgeting issues, but so far we've been able to hold steady. It's just a matter of, you know, disperse. Sometimes those resources get spread out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And that's a question we've been addressing recently. Just this last year, we went through the process, and we now have a brand new strategic plan to guide us for the next 3 years. So really making sure that we strategize and we focus on what is really a priority. We did a community survey to see what people said they needed, and that's what we are trying to address. We're trying to address community needs, the things that they say are a problem or that need to continue.
Mm-hmm. I've got the KDLL community calendar here in front of me, and both of your libraries tomorrow are going to have Harry Potter night.
Harry Potter book night. It's actually across the country.
Yes.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay.
Maybe the world.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence that we chose that date and are doing the same thing at the same time.
Okay, so February 1st is somehow Harry Potter Day. Did I miss that?
Is it always February 1st?
I think
I'm not sure.
The first Thursday of February.
Yeah. Oh. Whoops.
Now, what's significant about that? First Thursday.
I think it's pretty arbitrary.
May 4th is Star Wars Day for a reason.
Well, and we do, May the 4th be with you, a program on Star Wars Day.
So. Oh, good. All right. Well, what are you guys doing for Star Wars? Or, I mean, Harry Potter, Potter Night? I mean, I might want to come. I mean, clearly I'd be Hagrid, obviously.
Well, people do come in costume, and we get a lot of people. I have to admit, I didn't talk to the children's librarian, James, about exactly what they're doing for Harry Potter Book Night this year, but I know that there are always Harry Potter-themed crafts, snacks, and activities.
Yeah, I know I have been overhearing them running back and forth. I believe they're mixing potions, and I believe there might be some polyjuice potion involved, and usually all of our staff dress up.
Butterbeer?
Yes, last year they had that, so they'll probably have that this year as well.
Well, I see also in Soldotna a Harry Potter-themed Escape the Room activity for adults. So that's like that thing you see where everybody goes into a locked room and you have to figure out the clues to escape.
Yes, it's a little bit of a misnomer because it's almost more of a break into the box. But in order to escape the room, you have to break into the box. And we just started doing these the tail end of last year, and they've been very well received, very popular. People have really enjoyed them. It's a great team building exercise. We've even had local businesses contact us to see if we could run them for their business, and they've been able to come in. And I believe Kina has one on Friday as well.
We do teen escape nights, but coincidentally, we have an escape room for adults on Friday night this week, and it's the same sort of thing. It's a big deal in libraries right now. I actually did a whole pre-conference session on it, and it is a great team building thing, and it's pretty popular. Our adult escape room on Friday is almost completely sold out, so if you want to attend, it's free, but we limit registration because of the parameters of the thing. So.
Right. Wow. I'm pretty excited about this. tell me about the break the box and stuff. I need to know more about this.
So essentially you work with a team, and so that's where the team building comes in. And usually it's anywhere from 10 to 15 people, depending on how hard the puzzles are. And that's what it is. You solve multiple puzzles, and a lot of times one clue leads to another, so you can't necessarily do them out of order. And I think the recent number I heard from our youth librarian was that it's like a 20 to 30% success rate. So it's actually more common that you do not escape the room. So it's supposed to be pretty difficult. That's about it. I'm actually going to be participating in tomorrow's Harry Potter Escape the Room because I have not yet participated. So tomorrow I'd be able to tell you more.
Oh.
Well, and ours apparently has an early FBI escape theme. So apparently it's a spy type escape.
Oh, man. This could be awesome. Cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And you can do any theme. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. What are some of the other non-checking out books things you folks do?
Well, there's a long list of things that we do. We actually had a grant this summer to have an intern work on a project, and the project we chose was Raspberry Pi, which is not something that you eat. They're little tiny computers about the size of a deck of cards. The Friends of the Library supported the purchase of those, and now we have a Raspberry Pi Club, and kids come in and program things, and we pretty much almost don't need to lead those because they are off and running with those computers and the screens and designing things and making things work and getting vegetables to talk and all sorts of things.
Wow.
So that's something we're really excited about, trying to get more STEM, science and technology and math kind of things incorporated into some of our programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on that same note, last year we were able to purchase a 3D printer. We were able to purchase it with donated funds. All the money was donated to buy it. And so right now people can submit their 3D print models and we will print them for them. We also have offered we had kind of a intro to 3D printing, and we plan on offering some classes to actually teach people how to use the software so they can build their own models.
Oh, wow. I was joking on the air earlier that I was going to ask Is the Dewey Decimal System dead? But I really should ask. Does anyone use that anymore? Or is that like
yes,
Latin?
Yes, we're still transitioning over to more of a word-based system so that some of our collection is still in Dewey Decimal, but others are not. Some portions of it, like cooking and travel, are organized more like on a bookstore model. They're modeled on a system in Colorado called WordThink. So the Dewey Decimal system won't be in Kenai that much longer.
Ah.
And for now, Soldotna still has the Dewey Decimal system for our nonfiction collections. I've had some ideas about changing the picture book section. King County in Washington State has had some success with giving their picture books more collection titles that parents and children would look for. So like you might have the bedtime books in one area, you might have the favorite friends. So, but that's one of those projects that would take quite a bit of time and some advanced planning and probably some grant money.
Ah, well, it's nice to know that Mr. Dewey is not spinning at 100 miles per hour in his grave. You guys have a lot of papers in front of you. I see
yes.
A calendar here, Kenai Community Library, and it every single day is full of something going on at your library.
Yes, there's always something happening at the library. And it takes a team to put those things together and keep it all up and running. But we have everything from cooking classes to art classes and then the normal story hours. We have after-hours programs for teens so that they can come and be in the library and get subs or pizza and have certain sometimes they run around the library, too, when we're closed.
Well, let me ask you this. We live in a rather conservative part of Alaska. Kenai and Soldotna, the cities, maybe a little less so, but there's still an element of, you know, don't tax me and don't spend any money on anything and, you know, tear down everything. Do you folks get much pushback from people who say, well, you know, you should have just like a tin building and some books on a shelf and one person there with a stamp just checking out books. That's what a library should be. Do you get any pushback from the libertarian types who don't think government money should be spent on such frivolities as Harry Potter night and pizza making night and what have you?
We have not. I think one study that I read said that public libraries in rural communities are receiving less of that pushback, I think because we need that community center like we've been talking about. It's one of the few places where you can go and you can go most times of the day. You can have someone who really honestly cares about helping you with whatever your need is or whatever your recreational want is. As long as we have it in the library, we'll help you with it. You know, that face-to-face interaction and also a comfortable place to be. There's this idea of a third place that's not home, it's not work, it's somewhere you can just be. And also in America in particular, we really need these places that are neutral zones, that are safe for everybody, where people can talk to each other even if they don't agree on every topic. They feel like their ideas have meaning and they're able to share them freely. So that's one thing that we've seen. We haven't seen people coming in and saying those things. Also, libraries, public libraries are a very good investment. Every year, I estimate about how much our public library saved local community members. And for last calendar year, it was $2 million that was saved to community residents that were using the public library. And that's based off of what they would have spent had they had to buy all those books, had they needed to rent meeting spaces, which is another service we provide, is free meeting spaces for groups and organizations. And also, I believe the statistics say, like, for every dollar invested in a public library, it's a return on investment of $4 to the community. And I think that might have even increased in recent years.
We haven't had any pushback in Kenai. I think the other thing that we do, in addition to the things that Rachel mentioned, is, first of all, we both have fireplaces, so they are fun places to hang out. But also, the libraries provide fast internet connections and computers. And for a lot of our people, particularly in this area, they may or may not have access to a good internet connection. And even if they have access, they may not be able to afford it. So we are sort of their window on the world in the sense that they can come there. And in the Kenai Library, we also even loan out laptops in-house so that they can go sit anywhere that's comfortable and access the internet. So we get used a lot for that. There are so many things that people can only do online now. We get a limited number of PFD forms. The state really wants people to fly online. The IRS has most of their stuff online. They're hardly giving us any forms at all. Jobs have to be applied for online. So we provide a place for people to access the internet that they don't have at home. They either can't afford it or they don't have the equipment.
Oh, wow. Since you have such a wide range of folks coming in there, well, since you have, I assume you both have, like, school kids come in after school or in the summertime, they come in different times, and there's so many of them. Do you guys serve as maybe a, I don't know if it's a first line, but as early line of warning of alert of some kids don't seem like they're getting anything to eat or if they're distressed in some horrible way? Do you guys work with social services? You mentioned the food, and I'm thinking, they should put the library where the food bank is.
Well, actually, both Kenai and Soldotna partner with the Anchorage Food Bank of Alaska, and provide lunches for children during the summer. Soldotna does it Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We started last year just doing Thursday. We're now going to do Tuesday, Thursday. So Monday through Friday, anyone under the age of 18 can come to our libraries and get a lunch for free. So that's just like one of the partnerships that we have with other agencies, whether they be other city departments or going to Head Start at the Kenaitse tribe. So yes, we do get involved with children, and we're also a bridge so that when they end at school in May and then start in August, we keep them reading so that they don't lose those reading skills over the summer. Summer reading is not just a fun activity. It's actually designed to fill a gap in the education system.
Yeah, if students don't read over the summer, and this actually applies to math skills as well, if they don't do math during the summer, they can lose a whole grade level of reading skills. That's a big deal if they start the next school year. And if you look at families that can afford books and they have tons of books in the house, and those children are obviously reading all summer compared to those that maybe they can't afford to have books in the house, that's where the public library comes in. We not only provide programs to celebrate reading and to reward them for their reading efforts, we make it fun, but we also have those free books so they have access to everything.
Wow. How many people utilize the library on a day or a week or a month or a year?
Oh, I don't know that I brought my statistics, but I would say approximately in Kenai about 10,000 a month, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah, same for Soldotna. Last year, because I do have those numbers, we had 110,000 visitors come through our doors.
Wow.
Now, sometimes those statistics can be a little funky because there's 10,000 entries in it. 10,000 people came through the door, but there may not be 10,000 individual people who came through that door.
Yeah. Sometimes they walk in together. Sometimes, yes. Yeah.
Sure. That's still...
it's a lot of people.
Horrible at math, but,
it's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And we did have 9,692 people attend library programs, which those are, we counted noses, is what we say.
Yeah.
We count noses. So.
Now, our library program attendance went up from fiscal year 17, from fiscal year 16 by 45%. So people really, you talked about maybe is this fluff? Are people giving us pushback? Actually, people are loving the fact that we have those programs. Mm-hmm. So that attendance went up significantly.
And when you just look at the numbers, that's amazing. But when you really look at the difference that that can be making in somebody's life, we were talking before we started about how, for some people, we're overcoming isolation. Maybe those people would have just been home. We don't know. For others, we're teaching them things, especially for the children. Early literacy is one of our service priorities, making sure that these youngest children and their parents, they're prepared to enter school ready to read and to learn and to do all the things they need to do.
What kind of outreach are you doing to for young parents and their preschool kids?
So we have occasionally attended community events. That is very difficult with our small staffs, but we try to do what we can. For instance, we did have representatives at Project Homeless Connect, and that, of course, was for adults as well. We send out flyers, and we are in close contact with school librarians and with the school teachers that want us to be in touch with them. We have partnered in the past with specific classrooms. For instance, we had a class come in last year, and they did a puppet show, and the children created their own puppet show to then present to our preschool story time. The thing I really like about that is these little preschoolers are then seeing, oh, school is going to be so much fun. And so that was one of the things that I really thought was great. That's something we're always working on, is how to develop closer partnerships.
We have some close relationships with the daycare providers, so that particularly in the summer for summer reading, we make sure they get involved for those preschool ages. And, you know, the kids love the library. We do puppet shows and everything else. It's an amazing place for kids to be.
Oh, and I thought of the other thing that we're working on. We have flyers at like local family practices, at doctor's offices. And one of the things we'd love to do is see if we can get our library card application sent home with new parents. Because, you know, reading to your baby, even before they're born, is wonderful. And if they could get that library card right away, right from the get-go. And I think we both have 1,000 books before kindergarten programs, yeah, where it walks them through it. And really, 1,000 books is not as many as you would think. They, yeah, get through it pretty quickly.
We partner with the schools. We actually every year participate with in the Love of Reading program at, mm-hmm, the Mountain View Elementary, which is actually so much fun. It's great. The kids are so excited. And we've even taken Story Hour to the beach during DipNet, because we noticed a couple years ago, I said, how come there's nobody here in July for the summer reading? And I said, because they're all at the beach. So take Story Hour to the beach, and we've taken Story Hour to the park. So we do kind of outreach in that way. And the Story Hour on the beach is nice because it reaches a lot of those kids who might be down here from other parts of the state and don't have anything to do. So there's a tent set up, and
wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Man, I note here on our community calendar that at this very moment in the Soldotna Library, there is Bouncing Baby Storytime, and in the Kenai Library, Preschool Storytime. Yeah, so there you go, folks. We are going to take a very short break here, and I'm going to freshen my coffee, and we'll be back. I want to ask you folks how lucky we are in this area to have two great libraries a dozen miles apart, because so many places don't even have a library. So we're going to be back in a minute here on the Kenai Conversation. And we're back. It is 10:37. You're listening to KDLL, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Jay Barrett. You're listening to the Kenai Conversation. We are talking about libraries today, specifically the libraries of Kenai and Soldotna. With me are Mary Jo Joyner and Rachel Nash, the head librarians. Are you guys, what's your titles? Head librarian, librarian chief, library director?
Yeah. Director.
City librarian is my official title, but library director.
Sure. Great. Of the Kenai and Soldotna libraries, respectively. Well, how lucky are we to the people of our listening audience that we live in an area with two cities that are so dedicated to having quality libraries, and they're like a dozen miles apart?
Well, we are lucky, although I grew up in a big city, in the city of Chicago, and there were branch libraries, and they could be just as close. So I don't think it's that unusual to have libraries within small distances from each other.
See, I grew up in Dillingham, and we had a library the size of this room. So,
but the Kenai Peninsula has, you know, other libraries. There's a library in Cooper Landing and Moose Pass. There's Seward, Homer,
Kusilof,
Anchor Point, Kusilof, Nanilchik. So we're rich in libraries here, which is a wonderful thing. And the best thing right now is this consortium that we have joined recently. We joined about 4 years ago, and I think you guys are almost 2 years
in. 2 years ago, yeah.
The Alaska Library Catalog. So that, which is going to include soon all of the collections of the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the Fairbanks North Star Borough, which will mean that 92% of the collections in Alaska will be on that catalog. And that means not only are you lucky that you have the two of us close together, but that you can get something that's in Fairbanks, you can get something that's in Anchorage, you can get something in Juneau. You can order it from your home and have it delivered to either one of our libraries, and it will be sent there for you to pick up. And that is an amazing collection size. It's millions of titles. And it's a wonderful feature. It's a great sharing thing. And it's also a wonderful thing for our libraries because we can cooperatively buy or weed titles. so that, you know, it makes sense to have the collections where the most people use them. But if there's some esoteric item that you need, you can just get it. And we don't have to buy it. So it helps all of us in terms of budgeting and sharing resources. Libraries are the original sharing thing, the original green program.
Yeah, I think it's very inspirational, too, to see how we work together. It's the collection, but there's also the behind the scenes where now we are connected to almost all of the other large libraries in Alaska, and we communicate with each other. If we have a question about something, we help each other out. We think of programs that we can share together. There's a lot more collaboration going on just because we are talking to each other even more than before. So that there's that element as well. And from on a personal note, so I have two young children. My oldest is 4.5 and my youngest is 1.5. I can't believe that. And it is so amazing to see them when they go to the library and they go to these programs because they take full advantage of that. And I see, you know, people that I was raised in this community. So seeing people come in who I've known take advantage of all those resources for me, just it's just tremendous. And I do believe that we're very, very lucky.
So you grew up here?
I did. Yes. I grew up in Sterling.
Oh, okay. So when you were a little kid, did you go to the libraries all the time?
I did not all the time because I lived in Soldotna, but my school library was the place I went. I did go to the Soldotna Library, and I do have a very clear memory of, it might not be the first time I went, but it's the first time I remember. I couldn't read yet, and I was trying to learn, and I went with my dad, and he said, one day, you can read every book in this library if you choose. And I said, but Dad, it's so hard. I don't know if I can. And he said, you will, trust me. And it was just really neat that one day that became the place I worked, and the place that my family can come every day and learn. So,
wow.
I think the stories about how you got to libraries are kind of fun, especially from librarians. I can remember distinctly my first visit to the library in the branch in Chicago, which was a good distance from our house at that time. And my father took me, and they didn't allow children in the adult section, but it was in the evening and there was nobody in the children's section. And eventually, they let me go into the adult section, too, because they said they knew I would behave. One of the reasons I went into librarianship is because I had a slew of librarians who were not so very nice. And I really thought that somebody needed to get into that profession and be nice to people. customer service is really the new buzzword in libraries. Really, it's all about our customers. It's about our taxpayers and the people who support us. Just like your listener-supported radio, that we are here for the people in our community.
So the stereotype of the shushing librarian.
I had one like that.
but you're trying to do away with that stereotype.
Libraries are not quiet anymore, oh. And there are some people who are kind of upset about that sometimes.
Oh,
we are not quiet places.
The beauty of it is we do have something for everyone. So we have the quiet spaces if they need it to be quiet, but the majority of people would like to be able to talk freely. And like we were talking about before, that's a very important thing in our culture, that we need to be able to share ideas with one another.
Mm-hmm. I'm not somebody who uses libraries a lot. I'm sorry to say I should, maybe more than I do. Maybe I'll find a reason, Harry Potter. But for a young parent in my situation, hasn't used libraries a lot, but wants to take advantage of some of these things and bring their child there and stuff. And if they're, you know, running around doing library stuff, how do you ensure or oversee, you know, with everything going on, everybody's safety in there. Is that a concern at all?
It is. We always have patron conduct policies to help with that. And our strategic plan, that is one of the things that we address, is that we want the library to be a safe and comfortable and welcoming place. For children in particular, you know, we do rely on the parents to make sure that they are parenting. And I certainly know my children are not always on their best behavior in the library, and that's okay. And like Mary Jo was saying, we don't want to be mean about it. We try to be very polite about it, but we also make sure parents are aware that it's a public place. So that's, I think, one of the ways we handle that is we do have an age limit. You need an adult with you unless you are 10. And that's, the library board debated this at length, and that was the age they decided. However, you know, that it is up to the parents, of course, to determine whether their child is ready to be on their own or not.
When we did our library expansion in Kenai, we specifically designed the space to have spaces for everybody, quiet spaces, study rooms, conference rooms people can book. But we also did an enclosed children's room because our community felt very strongly that in the old library, that the children's room was open to everything, and it was very noisy, and it did disturb people. But we've found that it also keeps children safe because they're in a contained room, and we actually have a separate children's bathroom in there so that we don't have kids running up and back through the building, and we don't have to worry about them using the men's room or the ladies' room on their own. And it's actually a showplace of the Kenai children's room because it's very cute. You'd have to see it. But safety is an issue.
Okay. Let's see. What was, before we came back on the air here, there was something that one of you wanted to say here in conjunction with how lucky we are to have libraries here.
I think it was pretty much about the Alaska Library Catalog.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
You know, also, you talked about how you don't get to the library that much. We have an awful lot of customers who don't get into the library very much, but they use our electronic resources. Ah. We have something called Overdrive, and it has ebooks and audiobooks, and people can check them out, download them to their devices, and use them, and they're free. I don't understand why everybody isn't using them, because I know when I travel, it's a lot easier to download 7 books, which you're allowed, and just take them on my tablet with me.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people like to use them for the audiobooks. The cost of these things, if you're buying them yourself, particularly the audiobooks, are pretty expensive.
I have an Audible account. It's like $14 a book.
Yeah, well, that's actually the systems, the publishers charge libraries a lot more for those things, which is why we're in a consortium to buy them, because we couldn't afford them. What you pay for $14 for a bestseller on Amazon will be about $90 for the library, but we're sharing it with everyone. But really, everybody should be using this service. It's a great deal. Yeah. And we take recommendations. There's a button on there on that website that says, you know, recommend a title, and you can recommend something. And when it's purchased, they'll send you an email, and you can download it and listen to it.
Yeah, we hear a lot of reports from people that do a lot of driving, whether it's commuting or because that's their job, and they say they just love it. You can, once you get it set up, you tap a couple buttons and you've got it downloaded and you're good to go.
Wow.
Don't have to change out the discs or anything for the electronic audiobooks. And we also do collect for Battle of the Books. There's a special collection. So if the school libraries don't have copies or our copies are checked out, they can download them that way.
Oh, wow. I'm on the Overdrive website here. I called it up while you guys were talking, and they have New York Times bestsellers. They have recommended reads, different challenges, favorite books from the folks who are putting all this together, Andrew Carnegie Award shortlist, all sorts of books here.
Yeah. Sometimes the really popular things have holes and waiting lists, but as soon as it becomes available, they'll send you an email that it's come in, and some things might take a little longer than others, but recently I'm going on vacation in a couple weeks, and I put some holds on things thinking, well, they'll come in when about the time I go on vacation, but no, 2 days later they were there. So
and that's the thing people have to understand about the difference. They can't just go and get them whenever they want and keep them forever.
Well,
they're checking them out, right?
Yes, you're checking it out, and it's just like, well, it's not just like a library book, but after 3 weeks, it kind of goes poof and it's gone. It's just, it's a great service. You can't necessarily get instant gratification because you might have to put a hold on a popular thing, but there's always a button there for currently available material. So if what you're interested in is reading something right now, you can click the button and say available now, and then you'll know which ones, it filters out those ones that are.
Wow. And both libraries are involved?
We yes. are, yes.
And how does one sign up for that? Do you need a library card?
You just need your library card.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
And then you go to the site, and you depending on your device, you download an app or some sort of tool that will allow you to either listen or read the book.
Mm-hmm. You know, earlier you mentioned the consortium with the University of Alaska Libraries. Does that mean that somebody with a University of Alaska library card can come into your libraries?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So you can take your Kenai library card or your Sultana library card, and if you're in Anchorage, you can go to LUSAC and check things out. Mm-hmm. If you, as soon as Fairbanks gets in there, you could go to the University of Alaska Fairbanks and check something out. It's an amazing service. There used to be some barriers between libraries. If you were from Kenai and you wanted to take something out from Anchorage, you'd have to pay $90 a year to have a card there. But now, because of the consortium, you do not have to do that. It makes it a little hard to fund libraries because I think they were getting some revenue that way. But it's fantastic. So if you go to Seward, go on in and check out a book using your Kenai or Sultana card.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And also, we're trying to eliminate duplication of those cards because a lot of people had both Kenai and Sultana cards. And I think Rachel put it best when she said, lighten the load in your wallet. You just need to one card, pick one, and you know, because you can still do the same things with the other cards.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Let's see, Rachel, you said you were, you've been the librarian here 4 years?
Yep, 4.5. It'll be 5 years this August.
Wow. Yeah. Mary Jo, how long have you been librarian?
It's 12 years in this month.
Oh, wow. So, oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Wow. Were you in libraries before here?
I was in a public library on Martha's Vineyard.
Really? Wait, yeah. You went from Martha's Vineyard to Kenai?
Yeah, I like the fringe territory.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for your young colleague here?
Oh, no, she's doing a fabulous job.
Oh, okay.
She can teach me more. I think, you know, there's a huge difference in library school education between when I went and she went. And so a lot of us librarians who are nearing the ends of our career are learning a lot from the younger librarians. So.
That's one of the great things about library science, too, is that you're always learning. You constantly have to learn, and we're often early adopters and even advocates of emerging technologies.
You know, I was about to say something very along those lines, that I've noticed that libraries and librarians are early adopters, that, you know, just by the nature of being librarians and libraries needing to keep up on things like that.
I'd like to give a plug for the Alaska State Library.
Yes.
And also for the Alaska Library Community, which I find is the most, it's a wealth of information we all share with each other, but it's not just public libraries, it's academic, school, and public libraries. Our conference includes all of those people, and we have an incredible library community in this state.
Mm-hmm. You guys have like an annual convention?
We do, and it's coming up in March in Anchorage.
Oh. That's yes. About the time the Iditarod takes off. You guys get to watch that?
It used to be, some years it coincides with the start of the ceremonial start of the Iditarod, but this year it does not.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Well, what's coming up? What's in the future? What do you guys got going in your respective domains?
Well, we already talked about our escape rooms. First of all, we do have summer reading starting in May, so keep that on your calendar. And this weekend, we are actually showing a film. And I'm going to give you a hint because I'm not allowed to say the exact title, but in this 1953 film, a princess escapes her entourage and traverses incognito through the city of Rome. See if you can guess. Coffee, Donuts, and a Show is the name of the program. It starts this Saturday at 10:30 a.m., and there will be coffee, donuts, and a show, and also some healthier eating options, too. So come
let
on
me,
out.
Let me just say Audrey Hepburn is one of my favorite actresses yes. of all time.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think you guessed the title.
Yes. Yeah.
So are we not allowed to say the title?
I can't.
Oh. We can't. Publicize.
Yes,
there are public performance rights, and which we have to purchase in order to show movies, and we are not allowed to advertise the actual title.
Yet another challenge to marketing that we face.
Well, fortunately, I'm a journalist, and I'm protected by the First Amendment, and I could say any GD thing I want. I could even say GD if I wanted to, because it's it'd have to be in context. But Roman holiday.
There could be. Could be, I believe. And also, starting tomorrow, you can call our library and set up an appointment for free AARP tax aid preparation help. So if people are in need of help, and they are saying seats are limited, so if you know how to use a computer, maybe try job services first, but give us a call and we can try to see if we have a slot open.
Oh, okay.
And speaking of tax time, the Kenai Library has a dedicated video conferencing actual booth that somebody can go into to talk to somebody in Anchorage at the IRS. It has to be, it's not for just general tax help, but if you get a letter from the IRS and you have issues with them, you can come in on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 9 to 1 and sit it there and actually have a video conference with somebody in the IRS office about how to resolve your particular problem.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. That's that seems intimidating.
Well, it's actually a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting on hold.
If you get one of those letters and you're really scared you're being audited or they need some information and you don't really understand it, you can come in and they will help you out with that.
I'm just envisioning on the other side of the screen the picture of Big Brother. You know? What else? What else you got?
We have 3 minutes. American Girl Sewing. We have American Girl Club. And we have sewing machines that we were bought through a grant, and dolls that we loan out, the American Girl doll, which is rather expensive. And then you can get a whole kit with the doll and check out the doll. But we also have a sewing project once a month in which you make an outfit for the doll. And this month they're making a vest for the doll. They've done everything from capes to they've made beds and headbands and shoes. So it's incredibly popular. We also have... once a month that you can come in and play with dolls. And we have a giant dollhouse. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I'm not interested in playing with dolls, but Legos.
Mm-hmm. We have Legos.
You guys have Legos, and I'm not kidding. Can adults play with the Legos?
Sure.
Really? Because I have been meaning to come down and build something with Legos. It's been so long.
Yeah, we have the Legos. There was a state grant in the... Lego, I think, provided Legos across the country to libraries.
Wow.
And then we've, I think, all built on what they sent us, which was a random 10,000 blocks. And it's like, what are you going to do with those? Because we knew we needed people.
Now, did they come with the electronic controllers and motors and anything? Or is it just the blocks?
No, just the blocks.
That's cool.
Just a few other highlights. We have a fairy tale STEAM program coming up, so it's science themed, but about fairy tales. We also have beekeeping coming up, beekeeping for beginners, for teens and adults. And every Wednesday at 4 p.m., we have a teen program where teens can come and enjoy themselves. They usually have an activity like watercolor painting. So if you're interested in any of these things, check out our website, soldotna.org/library.
And our teen night in February will be the Great Banana Olympics.
It's an
exciting Banana Olympics program for tweens and teens and tweens from 10 to 14. And in honor of the Winter Olympics, they're hosting Olympic Games, which will include a banana for every event. So kids can sign up for that. It runs from 5:30 to 7:30.
Well, you know the
February 16th.
Winter Olympics are in South Korea.
Yes.
You know. Maybe it should be Olympic Games with kimchi.
I don't know why they chose bananas.
I don't know. Probably neater than kimchi.
I assume it has something to do with the games that they're playing. Okay.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for coming in. It's been a wonderful conversation, and we're going to have to do it again before 2019 too long. Maybe right before summer, we'll get a recap of what
you
guys are.
That would be great. We could actually send our children's librarians to talk to you about what's going on.
That would be terrific. Well, Mary Jo Joyner and Rachel Nash of the Kenai Library and the Soldotna Library, respectively, were our guests here on the Kenai Conversation. You've been listening to listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM.